Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services, providing affordable photographic and digital inventories of your home, office, or collectibles. Call 915-581-7099. And by Las Mansiones, the West Side's new luxury apartments, 915-704-1776. Now, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
It is a Saturday of history, young lady, Miss Melissa.
Whoever
are you there?
I am,
are you
yes,
here?
Yes, I'm here.
Testing
yes.
127. Hey, life goes on. You know, this is a history show, and
is it really?
Not that many people have their history in their town.
Well, nobody does a history show.
Explained on the radio, so.
Yes.
This has been going on for a long time.
Very long.
I think
time.
At least 20 years. I'm about to hit full 18 and start 19 at the end of the month. That's a whole lot of time there. But anyway, so we're doing what we can here. How you been?
I'm alive and well. It's a beautiful day out today.
It's just driving is not much fun over there.
Let's take the set outside and sit in the parking lot.
Oh, that'd be harder than you think. Because
yeah,
we'd be noisy too. Oh, you want microphones too? Okay, well.
Go sit at the freeway and watch the traffic that's not going down I-10 right now.
So we got this KTSM AM 690 thing. As always, as we say, Texas history does begin in El Paso. And I don't say that just to irk the other end of the state, but if that happens, it's a side benefit.
Hey, it's a challenge.
And what else is going on here?
Well, you can go to ktsmradio.com and you can, you know, click on the iHeartRadio link and they can listen to us all over the planet or maybe in the universe for all we know.
We don't know, but we're going to do trivia today as always, correct?
Yes, we are. Second hour, we're going to have two trivia questions where you, the winner of one of those trivia questions, could have a $20 gift certificate to that wonderful New Mexican restaurant up there in Canutillo at Pepe's.
We're playing football over there or something. I don't know what you're doing.
Oh, I'm looking for my mouse.
Oh, I see.
My pet mouse. Good.
And you'll find it running up your leg at the wrong time.
It's a good little mouse.
Lunch at Pepe's for those who can make it here. We've already declared the special. We'll get to that. Oh, in fact, the special is the Kroom special on the backside.
The Kroom?
We'll meet the author here shortly of that.
Kroom.
But your history moment. Tell me about that.
The history moment today is, we're always talking about Don Juan Ionate coming through the pass and the world being found. But, you know, a lot of people don't realize that there were two other expeditions prior to Don Juan Ionate coming to the pass. And one of these we're going to be talking about today and some of the people he met when he got here. Some of the people they met when they got here.
Those previous guys were also conquistadors, weren't they?
I don't really.
Were they soldiers or were they priests?
There was a mixture in both of them. There was always. I bet it was. There were always priests because they were looking for people to, you know, save.
Yeah, but they didn't go into the wilderness without a soldier. So
yeah, but these guys were more, I think, explorers. They were more trying to set the trail than they were like Don Juan, who was coming here to settle.
There was another guy. We'll have to get this report at some point. He took off and did an expedition that was not authorized by the King of Spain. They went and arrested his buns and threw him down in jail in Mexico. That's another whole story.
Yes, there's a few of those out there.
Oh, yeah. Well, life goes on. Speaking of people who should be... No, we're not going to go there with that, are we? We're not going to do that. But the man of the hour who is our guest today is Mr. Bernie Sargent. Hey, dude.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you talking to me?
The guy? You didn't get arrested yet this morning, did you?
No.
None of that stuff.
No.
Bernie's here.
Freed and cleared.
Hey, I'll tell you what. This is always fun to have you in here because we always look at stuff from a different perspective, and we actually just have a conversation about it, which I don't know what else to do in here. But the A to Z stuff you do, we sort of made that up.
Yeah.
And I don't know where we got to. We got to F's and then quit.
Well, we got to F's and then we got up to P.
F troop.
At our age.
And you kind of slide back down, and then you go back up. And,
yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Whatever the case may be, we're on a tangent today. We decided to take a look at James Wiley McGoffin.
Yes.
Now, he's a different dude because he's not the McGoffin home dude.
No, he's not the one that built the home. He owned the property, but he didn't build the home.
Oh, he owned that property.
Yes, he did, in the 1840s when he came here. And it's an interesting story, and there's so many side stories involved with James Wiley McGoffin.
Oh,
my gosh. Yeah, and it really amazed me the more I dug into it.
Well, start with the picture, because the only thing we really have of tangible evidence of him being around here physically that you can look at, there's his portrait above the piano in the McGoffin home.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you say he owned the property that his son ultimately built that house on.
Yes.
Upon.
Yes.
Now, there were some problems in between those two events.
There was many problems that took place, yeah.
Okay, start with the guy. He's a trader from Missouri,
yes.
Chihuahua.
He was actually born in Kentucky.
Okay.
And then moved to Missouri and lived in misery for a while.
That's easy to do.
That's easy to do. Yeah. He came from he was considered a wealthy young boy. His parents did well. His dad did very well. He was a merchant, And so he was they called him a child of privilege.
The older MacArthur, what was his name? James Wiley's dad?
Mariah with
Bariah.
A B.
Bariah. That guy, he didn't travel much. He traded at his merchant store.
Correct.
Okay, you got the kid now who wants to get on the trail.
Well, the kid,
James.
Yeah, he went off to school. He went to Center University and got educated there, formal education. So he grew up in that environment of mercantile business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And when he got out of there, he decided, you know, I'm going to go down and explore because he heard so much about the southern part of the United States. So he went down to New Orleans. And from New Orleans, he got on a ship and he was going down to Mexico and there was a storm came up. And unfortunately, the ship capsized and sunk. But all of the folks that were on board, including James Wiley MacArthur, were rescued by another boat that happened to be coming by at the same time. And they ended up down in Mexico, today's Mexico, where he stayed for a period of time and became pretty well accepted and became a businessman, a merchant of sorts in Mexico, and eventually became the consul for the United States in Mexico.
So he knew guys in D.C.?
Well, he knew people in the United States.
Yeah.
And their connections with D.C. got him that recognition. And from that recognition, he ended up over in Saltillo, where he ultimately lived for quite a period of time.
So where's that?
Saltillo would be kind of northwest of where he was at. Well, actually, southwest of Saltillo. Excuse me, Matamoros, where he was living for a period of time in Mexico.
Yeah. He must have picked up Spanish somewhere.
Oh, he did. Obviously. He became proficient.
Yeah, I mean, you had to.
You can't do that otherwise.
Yeah. And he actually gained a nickname down there of note, so to speak, and Melissa knows that one.
Yeah, which was Don Santiago.
Which means what?
A Saint John.
Ooh.
Because he was a very nice man.
There's nothing
he was
to do with
well liked. Yes,
nothing to do with Asiago cheese.
No, not Asiago.
Asiago.
Not that kind of stuff.
Different dude. Okay.
Different dude.
But
yes.
But he was known and sort of that's a respected term. Is
yes,
it,
very much.
Very
so.
Much so.
Yes,
when
at all levels, and it wasn't just the upper crust. I mean, the people he worked with on all levels, the people who worked for him really liked him.
That seemed like a nice guy.
Yeah, he was well respected.
And so he did trading on the trail, huh?
Well, that trail had, you know, he didn't even attempt the trail yet. This was all down in Mexico.
What year are you dealing? 1840s or something?
1840s, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, he was down, well, actually 1830s, 1840s. Then he ultimately went back to Missouri. Let me digress a little bit. He met his young wife, who came from a very wealthy family in Mexico, and they wedded and moved back to Missouri. And then that's when he decided, you know, the trail sounded like an opportunity to make more money. So he conjured up a number of wagons and so on, and he headed off along the Santa Fe Trail.
Well, you mean from Missouri to Santa Fe?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what do they call that piece of the trail?
Santa Fe Trail.
That is Santa Fe Trail,
yeah.
Right there? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Now, we were reading some family's information on him, that he actually came to El Paso 1826?
No, actually, he didn't. I did a little bit more research into that, and he didn't get here to this part until later, but he was on the southern part. You know, he got up to Paso del Norte, El Paso del Norte.
Oh, okay.
And but as far as his actually being in this region, it wasn't until he started the Santa Fe Trail and then down the Chihuahua Trail that he got into El Paso, what we now call El Paso.
Those darn family facts always get twisted,
yeah,
don't they?
Yeah, they do.
Okay, you're calling the Chihuahua Trail from Santa Fe to Chihuahua.
See, yes.
And the other one from Santa Fe to Missouri is
the Santa Fe Trail.
Mm-hmm. Huh. So where's the Camino Real come in?
That predates it.
Ah, but it's the whole thing.
Like quite a stream.
Up,
yeah.
up to Santa Fe.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Got it.
That was from Mexico City north.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, a little bit.
Did they follow the same route basically up in New Mexico? They had to. There's no other way to go. But yeah. Down when you get down into Mexico, you can branch off and go through Salima Yuca or somewhere else.
You can go all over the place down there. Yeah. The trails followed where there was water.
Yeah.
Okay. And the Rio Grande provided the water that they needed because with water you've got fish, you've got wildlife, and obviously there's villages along the way, so you could do trading with those villages, which offered them an opportunity to sell product or trade product with the villagers.
I was looking up that Espejo expedition. They ran into the Indians. They named them Monzos, I think, or Sumas, mm-hmm. Sumas, whatever.
Yeah.
But they had a lot of fish going here in El Paso.
They did.
They were fishing like crazy.
Yeah. Well, they still fish today.
But not like crazy.
No, not like crazy.
No, okay.
You just wait till the water drops down and you pick them up off the mud.
You walk in, they can't get away. Yeah, well. But go back 1 second. There was we did that dinner at the MacArthur home, and I think there was fish on the menu for one course. And the MacArthur's there was something in their records in the 1890s where they had caught a 4-foot sturgeon in the Rio Grande in El Paso.
Yeah, there were freshwater sturgeons in the Rio Grande.
Can you imagine doing that now? You don't have those kind of fish here.
Not anymore.
I don't think so.
Well, there was I know at one time up in Las Cruces that they have a museum up, not a museum, but it's kind of a I'm trying to remember what they call it.
It was the Museum of the Rio Grande or something like that.
Yeah, there's a fish tank up there, and they actually had a freshwater sturgeon in there.
Oh.
Yeah, and a couple of them. But they have them up north. They're up north towards Albuquerque.
North, yeah.
Yeah.
But since the river has been, let's say, weaned of 365-day-a-year flow, you don't see it down here anymore.
Well, but how could they have fish if it didn't run all year long?
It pretty much did.
Oh, okay.
It pretty much did. Very seldom did it go bone dry.
Like we do now. They flip the switch at Elephant Butte.
Well, there and further north, because there's so much agriculture that takes place up north that they siphon off a lot of water.
Well, I'm wondering now if Elephant Butte's going to have a good day after all this rain recently.
We recently got the irrigation report on what we can expect this year, and it was down.
Oh dear!
But I'm kind of waiting with bated breath, so to speak, talking about fish. Waiting with bated breath. For a new report to come out, because they've had a lot of snowfall since that report came out. And it's been on the east side of the mountains, and that's where we need the snow to fall for us to get the water.
So if you're listening up in Santa Fe, which you actually could do on this transmitter or online anywhere, thank you very much for the snow you endured.
That's right.
And please be sure to melt it and
send it on its way.
Send it down the river. Bernie Sargent's in the house. We got stuff going on here about MacGuffins, and it's a fascinating history, because you don't really understand how did the current guys get where they are. Unless you go back and see what Dad and Granddad did.
And his brother.
Oh,
Samuel?
Was he the one that was the governor of Kentucky?
Oh, no. His brother was not Samuel. It was the Beriah. He was the son.
Oh, that's right.
Named after his dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he became the 21st governor of Kentucky.
Yeah, there's a county in Kentucky. It's MacGuffin County.
Oh.
Yeah. It was a very influential family.
Yeah, they're big time, and we didn't really understand that, I don't think, until maybe you said that.
Mm-mm. And he was so in tune with the Mexican government that it was encouraged that he visit with President Polk and talk with him about what was going on the border, because the war was starting to swell down here. And Polk and his advisors figured that he could help them negotiate with the Mexicans this property that the aspirations of the United States was to take ownership of. And so he met with Polk, and he asked him if he would precede the military into the New Mexico territory.
And said, "We don't need to fire a shot if you sign here."
Yeah. And he did. In fact, he went
and worked.
He warned the governor of New Mexico territory that you got all these troops coming and you don't have that many here. You might want to think twice about fighting back.
You might want to show up a little white kerchief going, "Hi, welcome, come on in.
I'll bring out some tres leches and let's talk.
Chips and salsa for all. Come on in.
Come on down. Hey.
What is it we do? The special up there at Pepe's is the free salsa.
The
salsa platter?
Yeah, the salsa platter.
Radio free.
Yeah, radio free salsa platter.
But that's not a bad idea. So MacGuffin James Wiley.
Mm-hmm.
What's the name Wiley come from? I keep wanting to think Coyote.
That's
not right.
Well, you call this business the Acme.
Acme business, sure.
No, but
was that a big family name, or who knows?
Wiley?
Yeah.
You know, I'll look at that.
Yeah, I'm just curious.
I'll find out where that came from.
Just curious. But the thing is, we know the MacGuffin home in El Paso is one of the most interesting territorial architecture specimens still alive.
Oh, it's great.
And I don't think there's any more in Texas at all. I think if you have them, they're up in New Mexico.
Yeah, not quite like that.
With adobe and that kind of territorial ranch house thing, mm-hmm. Mexico may have a few.
Yeah. There are a few scattered around, but not with the integrity and the accuracy that they did, they being the Texas Historical Commission, in restoring it.
And it's in pristine condition because the last MacGuffin who lived in it turned the keys over at her death to the city of El Paso.
And speaking of fish,
yes, we were.
Whoever visits the MacGuffin home needs to see that very special fish.
Oh my God! Hey, is his buddy Hootie there?
Hootie and the Blowfish.
Hootie and isn't that a blowfish?
Yes, it is.
What the heck is it doing there?
It was a souvenir.
Somebody brought from somewhere, and
the MacGuffins.
But you can still buy. Well, I don't know if you can buy those anymore.
Poisonous, even dead. I think.
I don't think so. Because they have to inject the poison. It's kind of like a snake.
But don't go chewing on the thing to find out.
No, it's a delicacy in Japan.
Don't play catch.
Oh my God! None of that.
They only do it once.
Yeah.
Well, the MacGuffins are a fascinating group, and here's one main thing that this El Paso should understand. They were a Mexican household.
Yes, they were.
And even though they had the name McGoffin, don't let that fool you, because James...
they were multicultural, yeah.
James married the Mexican woman, and when Joseph was born, it was in Mexico.
Yes.
And he grew up speaking Spanish.
Yes, he did.
And so he knew all about Spanish before he knew all about English.
Yes, he did.
That's what I understand.
Well, they spoke both languages.
But,
yeah.
But the kid was just total.
Well, he was educated pretty young, wasn't he, back east?
Yeah, they sent him back to college.
But yeah, he went back there for a while, very young, though, didn't he?
Well,
Was it Joseph?
The whole family moved back there for a period of time, yeah. That's where James Wiley McGoffin's wife passed away, his first wife.
Yeah.
And then he married her sister.
Oh, that's what happened.
Yeah.
So that's what confused the researchers, I think. They had a trail going back to one family, like, whoa, where'd this other woman come from?
Yeah.
Anyway, James Wiley, we're going to talk more about him. Bernie Sargent's in the house. We got to explain some other things about El Paso history, because we got to go take a break and come back.
That's right.
And we do in the trivia second hour, and
yes,
you've got a
are.
Question or two we're going to throw out
yes,
to them.
Yes, I am.
You going to wait till then to throw them out?
Yeah,
you
I think
might
so.
As well.
But listen very carefully, because we've kind of bounced on some of them, but we'll talk about them again just before we...
Oh, so we're going to cover the material that's on the test.
Yes, we will.
I see.
And there'll be a test.
And if you pass the test, what happens?
Well, if you pass the test, you might win $20 for Pepe's in Canutillo. And if you don't, well, then you're staying after school.
That's right. And you can learn it or not. And
that's right.
And that's just a big deal. Okay. We'll take a call or two if you need to, or you got Facebook on its way.
Well, I'm working on Facebook now, but you can call us at 915-544-5876 or 544-KTSM.
Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina serves the old Griggs Mexican food recipes in a new location at 6761 Donovan Drive. Enjoy great New Mexican food with cold beer and the one and only margarita from the cantina. The managers and cooks from the original Griggs Restaurant serve tacos, combination plates, and sopapillas. Get the best Mexican food in the valley at Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina, 6761 Donovan, near Loop 375. Call 877-2152.
Message and data rates may apply. Texting and rolls for recurring text messages.
Rick and Robin got Z-Quiet for snoring. Listen to their story.
Rick is really good at snoring. Very good. As soon as he hits the pillow, it's like... That's what it sounds like. One of the first nights that Rick's used the Z-Quiet, my son said the next day, "Dad, I didn't even hear you in my room."
And with the Z-Quiet, I'm not being kicked and nudged and bumped and, you know, told to be quiet and roll over.
Before the Z-Quiet, not getting a restful night's sleep was pretty common for both of us. Waking up the next day, you're groggy, you're tired, you're grumpy. And with Z-Quiet, it's the total opposite.
It's been great. Getting a restful night's sleep is great.
Z-Quiet works for both men and women. Text GO to 246810 or go to GetZQuiet.com. Try it risk-free for 30 days for just $9.95. Text GO to 246810 or go to GetZQuiet.com.
Now, more of the El Paso History Show, brought to you by ephistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive, Sargent Home and Business Inventories, and by Las Mansiones, the West Side's new luxury apartments. Here again, Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
A lot going on here to tell you about the history. Club Friendship. That's an interesting thing.
Friendly people.
Meeting Tuesday, March 26th. We're still ahead of that, right? I haven't passed that day. It's at St. Paul's Methodist Church on Edgemere, 11 a.m. The program is Teresita Urrea, the Curandera faith healer and Mexican revolutionist. And if she had just stuck to doing faith healing, I think the Mexican government would have left her alone. But she turned into a revolutionist. They kicked her out of Mexico. She was in South El Paso for a while. But that's a very interesting lady to hear about, presented by Esther Sanchez. The luncheon program is $10. Visitors are welcome. RSVP by Monday. But call them up anyway. 591-2326 will probably still take you. Here's an interesting thing to consider. Sunday, March 31st, 2019 at 2 p.m. to 3:30 p.m., tour the Holocaust Museum for free with Celebrate El Paso History people. For details, go to CelebrateElPasoHistory.org. And while some people think that's not really so much El Paso history, it really is. Because a lot of those people
Some of
them are still here. Thursday, April the 4th. Now, here's another one that's unusual. Check this out.
Is this a recording or is this live?
What's that?
The April 4th one.
No, they're going to do that live.
Oh, cool.
I mean, it's Thursday, April 4th is 11:30 to 1 p.m. at the Centennial Museum. I mean, himself, Sam Donaldson.
Yeah, that's why I was like, wow.
Is himself, Sam Donaldson, but herself, Adair Margo.
Yeah, well, we see her all the time.
Yeah, but can you imagine the two of them together?
Can we get them both back here?
It's
again?
Like Ronald Reagan and Sam Donaldson again.
Yeah, can we get Sam back in the studio?
I think I'd just rather watch. But anyway, so they're
he's fun.
He's cute. He's fun. Paint and Ink, The Life of a War Correspondent. That's the topic. And it's a presentation, a Q&A with Sam and Adair, Thursday, the 4th of April at 11:30. Now, you got a bunch of stuff coming up in April.
Yeah, I know. April's going to be really active. And we've got some events coming up. You've got the Harvey Girls of El Paso, Texas. They'll meet Monday, April 8th. You've got the Southwest Chapter of the Railway and Locomotive Historical Society will meet Wednesday, April 10th. And then you've got the Rio Grande Chapter of the Daughters of the Republic of Texas will meet Friday, April 12th. 2019, I throw that one there. And the El Paso Corral, the Westerns International, will meet Friday, April 26th. And that will be at the Sunland Park Holiday Inn over there at I-10 and Sunland Park Drive. But it's kind of a limited program right now. We're not sure exactly all the information. We'll have more details as we get up to that time. And I'd like everybody to wish Patricia Kidney, our cowgirl of the West, queen of the West, I should say. She's going to be having some surgery next week for her ankle. So just wish her well when you can. Just say keep her in her thoughts.
Don't go tripping.
Don't go tripping, yes.
All right, we got things going on here as always. Bernie Sargent's in the house for a couple hours. He's the one making noise on the microphone over there.
Are you chewing on the microphone?
No, it keeps falling.
Oh, that's the one that needs Viagra. Go work that out over there. We talked to somebody who called us on the radio, 544-5876. Name is Esteban. Good morning.
Esteban.
Good morning. I wonder, Bernie, if you could explain a little bit about that time period when the center of government for this area was not McGoffinsville or El Paso del Norte, but was actually in San Elizario.
For 10 minutes.
For a brief period of time. Well, you know, they had set up the missions and the Presidio in San Elizario. And San Elizario was the unofficial capital, so to speak, of this particular area for a period of time. And there was always a struggle between the different communities as they grew, the different missions and the populations around them grew. They pretty much all wanted to have some control, but the ultimate control was in Mexico across the border in Paso del Norte. And so, you know, that's true. Now, it goes on until we actually took possession in 1848, 1849 of the United States of this particular area. And there was still a little bit of animosity, obviously, between the folks that lived here and the folks that came here from other parts of the United States. But there also was a period of time where San Elizario felt they should be the county seat.
They were.
And Socorro thought they should be the county seat. And what ended up happening is the town of El Paso, which had a very small population, decided, no, we're going to be the county seat. Now we're talking about the 1870s. So they decided El Paso, there was going to be a vote. And when they took a vote, El Pasoans actually brought people from across the border illegally and plied them with beverages and food to vote to make the city of El Paso the county seat, and that's how we became the county seat and replaced San Elizario in any aspirations of Socorro of being the county seat.
How about that, Esteban?
Back in the day of the Salt War, I think that was in the 1870s,
mm-hmm.
Whenever they had problems with the Indians and the rabble-rousers out there, they called Austin to send some Rangers out here. How long did it take the Texas Rangers to travel from Austin to San Elizario?
Well, they actually had outposts of the Texas Rangers closer. We had I think the headquarters at that time was in Alpine, but we had a small contingency of Rangers this particular area. But there wasn't really enough to contain that uprising because that was the Second Salt War. When that Second Salt War took place in the 1870s, these particular Texas Rangers thought they were bulletproof, and they tried to fend off the folks that were rising up against the people that were trying to capture and control the salt out by the Guadalupes. And we ended up losing a couple of Texas Rangers because of they weren't bulletproof. And so then they sent in the military, and the military quelled that whole situation. Yep. The very first salt war that took place was on the east side of the mountains going up towards Las Cruces and a little further north. And that was something that James Wiley McGoffin was involved with. His connections with the military and the United States government allowed him to have possession of a cannon. So when the Las Cruces went across the range to garner the salt, he was there with a contingency of supporters, and they fought off those Las Cruces and maintained possession of the salt up there on the east side of the mountains.
There was a cannon involved.
There was a cannon, yeah. And the Las Cruces had a trial up there. Now, New Mexico wasn't a state yet, so it was a territorial trial. And they found James Wiley McGoffin and his supporters guilty, but they had no jurisdiction down here, so it just kind of went away.
But they borrowed a cannon.
Yeah, from the military.
Fort Bliss, yeah. Or whoever.
Yeah. Well, McGoffin had had leased property to the military for the military base, which ultimately became Fort Bliss in McGoffinsville.
Esteban, have we covered your topic?
Well, just one last quick one. Uh-huh. How long would it take a stagecoach or a group of rangers to travel from Austin to El Paso on horseback?
At a very quick pace, probably about 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
Wow.
No, really?
No, they got across. The stagecoaches went faster than that, didn't they?
No, not really.
Oh. We don't know. I don't know.
It would depend on weather, I think. And,
well, yeah, the weather
and
the conditions and if the,
yeah.
And the Indians.
Rivers,
I mean,
and yeah.
The natives were not too conducive of people traveling through their land.
No, they didn't like that.
No. So they oftentimes had to stop. They had to replenish the horses. They had to water them.
But to Esteban's question, if they notified the crowd, let's say, over in Alpine, would that be by telegraph or was there telegraph?
No, they would have to send somebody by horseback.
Oh, my.
They didn't
God.
Have telegraph back in the 1830s.
So however long it took to ride a horse, dude, I don't know what that number is.
Yeah, they could make it quicker, but they would beat the heck out of the horses.
Ooh, bummer. Hey, thanks for calling. You take a read. We got another caller named Jorge on the radio. Jorge, what's happening?
Good morning. Hey. I wanted to call because I heard this. He was asking about San Rosario. And in about 1844, I came across in a book there at Citadel High School a fact that pertained to the Ray of Antonio Ray. I think he might have been the brother of Luis Ray, and he was prefect of Paso de Norte at that time. And they came to him, Don Anna, columnist Don Anna, and they asked him if he would authenticate their conversation there in Don Anna. And it was just about this time that I believe Luis Ray was Comandante of San Rosario. And I found that interesting because there seemed to be a family connection between San Rosario with respect to Luis Ray and Paso de Norte. Regards to Antonio Ray, who made that final authentication of Don Anna as colony before 1845.
A lot of people connected back then, obviously.
Well, the politics of the old period of time and somewhat today are somewhat incestuous. You know, you've seen families whose sons and cousins and uncles and aunts and so on, or uncles, would take charge or be appointed positions of importance. Same thing happened in New Mexico Territory up in Santa Fe. You know, they had a gentleman up here there was a governor, but his brother was also his adjutant. And his brother, Armijo, I believe his name was in charge of the military up there. And he didn't want to surrender to ultimately Kearney, who was coming in with all these troops. But the acting governor, the governor of New Mexico Territory, convinced him otherwise. And there was friction for quite some time. In fact, that I believe that that's what caused some of the problems as Alexander Doniphan, who was second in command to Kearney, was marching south and ran into the Mexican military in what we now know as Anthony or Brazos.
A little fight up there.
A little fight up there, yeah. Christmas. Merry Christmas. Oh, by the way.
Well, the Mexicans were heading north to save their country. Or whatever.
Yeah. Well,
right?
Yeah, it was their country, and There were people up there were quite happy with the leadership that the Mexican government laid over on them, and some of them weren't. The natives were more unhappy than the Mexicans were that were up there.
Well, the Mexicans showing up in Vado to fight Doniphan should have brought more than bows and arrows.
Well, those Mexicans were well-armed.
The ones that fought Doniphan?
Yeah, they were very well-armed.
I heard they also had some groups with bows and arrows.
Oh, yeah, well, they had some natives with them, sure.
But they didn't know how to fight an army.
It's some of the stories that I've read are that Doniphan, when he marched south, as he was approaching the Mexican soldiers, they were not too willing to fight that morning because it was Christmas morning, and they had been partying the night before Christmas Eve, so that didn't make things too conducive to fighting a war or a battle. They outnumbered Doniphan's troops like 3 or 4 to 1.
But the Doniphan had a bunch of the volunteer militiamen who ran up and then fell down on the ground, and the Mexicans thought they'd shot them all.
Yeah, the story was
they were just taking aim, better aim on from the ground.
Well, the story was that Doniphan, with the weapons they had at the time, they were the old muskets, so they had it took a little time to load those things.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, a good a good musketeer could load a could reload his weapon in 45 seconds to maybe a minute and a half.
And in the meantime, what's going on around you?
Exactly.
Yeah, oh, boy.
So what he did, as I was reading, is he had his soldiers line up in rows of three. The first ones would fire, then they would lay down, reload. The second one, fire, lay down, reload. And the third one would fire and lay down and reload. Well, the Mexican soldiers thought they were killing them.
Yeah.
Well, and in fact, they weren't. They were just reloading. So there was quite a number of Mexican soldiers killed and only seven American or Missouri regulars that were wounded.
Well, whatever the case may be, Doniphan prevailed.
He did.
And hey, he has the street named after him.
He does.
And that's how you got that street name.
Ah,
we probably need to take one more break here. Sergio's in there looking a little nervous. Should we take a break, Sergio?
By
the way, thank the control room people
yes.
in there. You got Shelley Sutherland Shelley. Playing the Wurlitzer known as the phone.
Yes.
And occasionally hitting the high notes,
yes.
as it may be.
But she's pounding
you,
the phone on the counter
doing
when it's
that.
Not working.
Sergio
Valenzuela.
The man who does his thing in there, makes
yes.
electrons. Go wherever they go.
See his hair standing up, getting his nose out the
Oh, maybe they should send him those to the transmitter.
Yes, he used to have straight hair when he first started here. So.
I'm trying to get on Facebook. I have my famous Windows 7 computer here that I'm trying to make work. But in the meantime, if you got something on Facebook, what is it?
Is that what the gerbils are doing running on that?
The gerbils are in here making a lot of noise, but they eat a lot of food. But what is the deal on Facebook? Anybody looking for us
Well,
there?
I haven't really had it. We've got a notification. I just haven't gotten into it yet. So I'm trying to get there.
I got nothing. Let's take a break. Shall we do
there
that?
Blue screen.
But people can call us.
They can call us at 915-581-7920.
No! Don't call
Oh, that's my home phone.
Don't call that number right now.
I'm sorry. I just saw a name. Jane Hall likes our photos in here, so we do have a name in there.
544-5876.
That explains all those spam calls we're getting at home.
I know, I know. Or
5,997. No.
Suppose Thomas Edison had given up.
9,998.
But his failures only led him to the next idea.
9,999.
Picture Times Square, dim, Las Vegas, dark, your home, black. Picture no electric light.
10,000. Come on.
Optimism. Pass it on. From the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
I was 11 years old at my first national championships. I fell I don't know how many times.
Michelle Kwan is the most decorated figure skater in U.S. history.
But I had a dream. My dream came true because I dedicated myself.
Dedication made Michelle Kwan a champion.
I was passionate about something, and I made sure that I worked hard for it.
And dedication can make your dreams a reality.
Whatever your dream and goals are, they can come true.
Dedication. Pass it on from the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
The West Side's newest luxury apartments are now leasing at Las Mansiones, 1776 Cimarron Trails, near North Wrestler Drive and Paseo del Norte, a mile from the new West Side Providence Hospital. Las Mansiones features three-story units with amazing views. To the east, the majestic Franklin Mountains, and to the west, El Paso's Upper Valley. You'll enjoy sunsets like you've never seen before from your own private balcony. Las Mansiones, 915-704-1776.
Let me ask you a question. How long has it been since you've updated your home or business list of assets or property inventory? In the case of a loss by fire, theft, or natural disaster, the insurance company and police will ask for detailed descriptions and often require pictures as proof of ownership. If you can't remember, you can't recover. Contact Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services. Our process provides detailed documentation of what you own. There is no price tag on peace of mind. Call 915-581-7099.
Now, more of the El Paso History Show, brought to you by EPHistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Doniphan Drive, Sargent Home and Business Inventories, and by Las Mansiones, the West Side's new luxury apartments. Here again, Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
We still got those Pattersons missing, and if you're interested to help find them, you can go read the articles from the El Paso Herald Post, 1950s and 60s and 70s and into the 80s, they were looking for these people. And it's a missing persons case in Kern Place. Very famous at the time, but it's never been solved. I think they've never left Kern Place. That's my opinion. But
hanging around.
Well, take a look at the articles. There's so many strange things that went on with that whole thing. But that's on our website, ephistory.com. Also, I'll let you know another website to take note of. And go there and take a look at this stuff, youtube.com, El Paso History TV. You will find yourself front and center with Mr. Bernard Sargent, not just sitting here like he is today, but on TV all over the county doing stuff. They are segments of our recent ABC 7 series from El Paso History TV. They're online. Again, that's YouTube.com, El Paso History TV. And join our channel. Automatically get noticed of the new videos. So do your thing. Go to .com, YouTube.com, and search El Paso History TV. Also, the poppies are blooming today. As good as they're going to get, I presume, out there.
We might get a few more with all the rain we've had.
Well, they keep them going, I guess.
Yeah.
But that's going on today till 4 o'clock. Get out there. You park at the EPCC. And it's a big deal out there to go out and see them in their natural habitat. And the Archaeology Museum is open. They got the downtown art market moved out there today. And so, again, it's be an interesting thing out there. And, oh, buy some Mexican poppies. You can buy a little seed pack. We went out there last week, took a look at everything, bought a whole bunch of them. So I'm not sure what we're going to do with them, but we're going to poppy something. What do you got?
Well, I've got the Sunset Heights Film Society continues their film program out at the International Museum of Art, and they'd love to have you plan spending your Saturday afternoons with Jay at 2 p.m. for insightful commentary, anecdotes, and facts behind the films. And these are every Saturday, 2 p.m., and it's free admission, free parking, and you can get fresh popcorn, beverages, candy, and snacks for a small little fee. Now, one thing I want to point out, they've got this. We've got a couple more films for the end. We've got, today you've got a special spring break movie, and it's National Lampoon's Vacation, starring Chevy Chase. Next week is the L'Alliance Française de El Paso, which is the French Club. They've got two French language films. That'll be next week. And then coming in April, you're going to have on April 6th and 7th, it's going to be the Art of Art Society is going to present Kermazar, the arts festival. So put that on your calendar. And then all of April is going to be a great film program and all kinds of fun movies. So keep that in mind at the International Museum of Art.
And when's that Kermazar again?
Kermazar is going to be April 6th and 7th.
And they use that as a major fundraiser, yes, for the museum.
Yeah, and it's a great way to get some great gifts, some wonderful art. They have not just paintings, but they have also some great crafts. It's a great place to go.
It's really coming up in its world.
I mean,
it's a great facility physically.
Yeah, I mean, they used to be over at the church, Presbyterian Church on Schuster, and then they lost the location there. I think it's perfect for them to be at the museum. I think it's wonderful.
It's just a lot of them down there working hard at it. Go down there and help them and look at what they've got. And it's where the Crest Collection used to be. And so you'll see an interesting professional gallery down there.
Oh, my God, there's all kinds. Local artists and then international artists and then some great collections. I think they've just added a Buddha collection.
They've got an African collection. They have Mexican Revolution.
Doll collection, you name it. Anything,
the doll collection.
Something for everybody.
I don't like dolls all that much, but they got thousands of millions, maybe just not that many, but lots of them.
Give you a nightmare. No.
No, they don't have those dolls over there. They've got Bernie Sargent. We've got Bernie
Sargent. We stuffed him and stuff.
We've got
there.
Bernie Sargent here. And Bernie, you did pick the pop, the Pepe special already, right?
I did.
And it was the Croom.
That's right.
C-R-O-O-M.
What is the Croom?
Well, that's the name of a guy's name.
No, but what is it?
Oh,
describe
okay, here it is.
It.
Green enchilada, folded taco, chili relleno, and beans.
Yes, see, now you got to make people, Croom, I'm like, ew.
Is that Perry Croom?
Yeah, Perry Croom.
That was a guy's name, and he came in and always ordered that a la carte, so they made it an event.
Well, see, I have the chicken soup every time I go in. Do you think they're going to name it after me eventually?
They might.
I hope, you know.
Do you want to be called the chicken soup of
Melissa? I just want to be soupy.
Or the Melissa chicken soup. pick one. Move on.
The hen.
Okay, Bernie's here. We got stuff to talk about. James Wiley was on the brain, something to do. But also, I can't state enough the reason to save McGoffin Home was so many reasons. And they did save it.
Yes.
And the family sold it to the city. And at that point,
The city and the state.
Well,
it's a 50-50 partnership.
Oh, I thought the city bought it and then the state moved into it. Whatever. They got it. They got it put into government to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
One thing government can do is this kind of stuff, maybe.
Well, Parks and Rec had it, the state. And then it was turned over to the Texas Historical Commission. They're the ones that restored it.
Okay, so that's how we got the McGoffin Home now.
Mm-hmm.
And backing up from that, the guy who built it was Joseph.
Joseph, yes.
And it was his father who bought the property. Now, what happened to that property
when
it became time for the Civil of the War?
Well, let me go back just a little bit before that period of time and talk a little bit about the Santa Fe Trail and some of the things that took place, some of the people involved with James Wiley McGoffin. And the expression, and make sure they let us know when we get that phone call coming in too, so I can stop.
Oh, we'll hear about it.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, what happened was this whole thing with MacGoffin being summoned to talk with Polk about his assistance with the settlement of this particular part of the country. There was also, it was very well known that a certain faction of the people would not be too open to the fact that you had the Americans coming in.
Who would they be?
The Mexicans. Yeah.
Yeah, because that was Mexico.
Yeah, it was Mexico. So what happened was they assigned a gentleman by the name of Kearney to put together troops to march into Santa Fe. And Kearney, knowing the situation was taking place along the trails and the fact that you not only had the Mexicans who were not not really conducive to this whole thing, you also had the natives that weren't really happy about the invasion that was taking place on their land, he decided that each of the wagon trains or expeditions that were coming through would be escorted by military. So he was the one to set that forth, that ball moving forward. And if you go back further into Kearney's history, he was involved in the War of 1812 and was actually taken prisoner by the English in Canada. He was involved in the very first war in 1812 up on the Canadian border right by Niagara Falls. Your wife would know very well about that part.
Slowly they turned.
Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead.
So he was captured and eventually released by the English back into the United States and continued his service. He actually served in the military for 50 years.
Wow.
Yeah. But anyway, Kearney marched into Santa Fe ahead of Doniphan, his brother Samuel, and his sister-in-law, Susan Shelby MacGoffin, with their wagon train full of goodies going forward. And marched in. Now, by then, they'd also established a peaceful resolution with the governor of Mexico because James Wiley MacGoffin went with him. Okay? They went into Santa Fe. They got this whole thing set up. Samuel came in with Susan and their expedition, so to speak, the mercantile expedition.
What year?
1847.
Seven, okay.
Mm-hmm. They got there and were pretty well received, but you could tell that the people weren't all happy about this whole thing. As mm-hmm. I mentioned, Armijo and his brother, they were there. Well, Kearney split the troops up, and he said to Doniphan, you take this many number of soldiers, and you go south and make sure that the Mexican soldiers keep moving across the border, and ultimately down to Chihuahua, where he would meet up with another group of U.S. military. So he did, and then he commandeered another soldier by the name of Cook. Now, Cook was an interesting individual in himself in that he had served, five decades in the military also. But Cook marched down the Rio Grande River to about where Truth or Consequences, New Mexico is, and then headed southwest to California. Hmm. And kind of a strange twist of fate, Kearney had met Lewis and Clark. In fact, he married one of the daughters of Lewis, Meriwether Lewis, and also met Sacagawea. Now, when Cook got down to TRC, he met a scout by the name of Charbonneau. Charbonneau was the son of Sacagawea.
Oh, this is getting complicated.
Yeah, I know.
And so, it's like, nah.
So,
but it's fascinating.
So Charbonneau escorted them to the coast in California.
Oh, yeah.
And I was telling Melissa this morning, one of the artifacts that we were given when I was in California when we first met by her mother was a metate.
Oh, yeah.
Two of them. But the one was from the Luisinha Indians, which were in California. Now, when Cook was going west, they got to a point past Nogales, and the Luisinha Indians were down there, but they were being attacked by the Mexican military. And so Cook set up an encampment and protected the Indians from the Mexican soldiers.
Oh, okay.
And this Luisinha Metate that we have came from those Indians, which is, I just went, wow.
You have both pieces of the Metate,
yeah.
The stone?
Well, I've got two of them,
yeah.
Solid ones.
One my grandmother dug out of the hills of Palos Verdes
when she
was digging up rocks to build for around her wall at her house.
Cool.
Yeah. So it's kind of fun when you put this stuff together and you find these things. Now, when Kearney was going west on his more northern route, his guide was a gentleman by the name of, now I'm going to draw a complete blank. It's called what do you call it?
Mr. Blank, and then what happened with Mr. Blank?
I wasn't paying attention
moving
to what
on.
I was saying.
Move on past Mr. Blank.
That's just how bad I wasn't even listening to you.
Oh, Carson, Kit Carson.
Oh, Kit Carson.
Was his guide going west. And Kit Carson told him, said, don't worry about taking all your troops with you because the Mexicans have surrendered in California, and there's no need to take all that military with you. So he only took 100 troops with him.
Wow.
But when he got there, he found out just the difference. They hadn't surrendered yet. But he was able to negotiate peace in California after a couple small skirmishes.
You got to watch out for that Carson guy.
I know, you do. Yeah. Well, in fact, we talked earlier shows about his older brother that taught him everything he knew about being a frontiersman, Moses Carson.
Moses.
He's buried
lived
here
in El Paso. He was a Mason, and he was buried in El Paso.
And his son Johnny had a great TV show.
Oh, he did.
No, that wasn't him. That wasn't him.
Great. No.
We need to take a break. Call us if you want to. Give me that number. I want to.
915-544-5876 or 544-KTSM.
Warning. If you're drowning in debt you can't afford, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back, because you don't. What the credit card companies don't want you to know is that there's actually a way to get debt-free without paying off your entire debt or going bankrupt. If you have $5,000 or more in credit card debt, you now have the right to let us settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. For free information, call Credit Associates now. 1-800-900-6131. We'll even show you how much money you could save. If you can't afford to pay off all your debt, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to. Call Credit Associates now for free information on how to get debt-free faster than you ever thought possible without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. For free information, call now, 1-800-900-6131. That's 1-800-900-6131. 1-800-900-6131.
Do you remember when you were three? Of course you don't. But do you remember when your kid was three? Yeah, so much fun. No more diapers. Score! Hey, it's Luke Lowenfield from the all-new Casa Kia on George Dieter. Well, guess who's three now? Casa Kia is. Yep, we're this many. And the late nights and terrible twos are behind us. And I'm quite sure none of our employees are in diapers anymore. Score! So if you have some young ones, like I do, I know safety and affordability are top priorities. So you got to look at the Casa Kia Sportage for just $21,985 or the Casa Kia Forte for $18,985. Look, at Casa Kia, we have six models that start under 25 grand. That's family friendly. And speaking of family, Dad?
Boy, do I remember when you were three. Hey, I'm Clay Lowenfield. Won't tell any bad stories. This is our celebration of 50 years of Casa. So many stories and memories, from inspired to inspiring. I am proud of what my father started at Team Casa, and I am so proud of this next generation. The Casa Way is our commitment to all things home. Welcome to Team Casa, and welcome home.
Here at Casa Kia.
Now, more of the El Paso History Show, brought to you by EPHistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. Sargent Home and Business Inventories, and by Las Mansiones, the West Side's new luxury apartments. Here again, Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
A lot going on here. We got Jorge on hold there. We got the History Museum. The exhibit is now open and will be open for a little while. And that's called Fire and Earth Exhibit. It features many examples of Casas Grandes and Mata Ortiz ceramics from the permanent collection of the Archaeology Museum and the Museum of Art. They moved them into history to mix it all up there and go look at that stuff. And that's at the 510 North Santa Fe Street. Also, another exhibit that's interesting, and they're busy today with a bunch of stuff at the Archaeology Museum. But if you want to wander in and look at one exhibit, it's on astronomy and the Mesoamerican cosmos. I think the Mesoamerican people of a few hundred years ago knew a lot more about the stars than we do. That's just my opinion. But go check that out. That's an exhibit at the El Paso Museum of Archaeology.
Aha. Well, you've also got, speaking of museums, you've got the McGoffin Home State Historic Site. And you ought to head on down there to tour the McGoffin Home, because it's just, they've really done some great things with it. And they're expanding on it now because they're going to be adding more rooms to it that had been kind of closed off to the public for quite a while, that had been office space and such. So as that grows, you're going to see even more. So head on back down there. And also, they've got some things that are happening on Saturdays, like a sci-fi book club. They have yoga classes, and you can reserve your spot for April cooking classes coming up and other special events. And you can do this by going to visit the McGoffin Home website, which is visitmcgoffinhome.com, or do something old-fashioned. Give them a call. And I can't even read the phone number because I highlighted it in green, and that was the stupidest thing I could ever do.
533-5147.
See, I'm glad you've got it there.
I just happened to have it.
I highlighted it in green, and then it just went away.
My announcer voice.
But they are located at 1117 McGuffin Avenue.
You sure about
that? I
can
read, yes.
All right, we got time for one more phone call. I'm not sure exactly when we're out of here this hour, but it will be shortly after we talk to Jorge again. Hey, dude.
Hi, Jorge.
Hi. I'm going to make this quick. My older sister, Carmen, she married a brother of, no, I'm saying this wrong. I'm trying to go back too far, too early.
3, 2, 1. Hi, Jorge. What's on your mind this morning? Start over.
What I'm trying to say is that one of Kit Carson's brothers, one of his descendants, married my older sister, Carmen. He was Robert Carson. She married Carson. Cool. Robert Carson, her second marriage.
And Johnny's not a cousin, right?
I don't think so.
Well, okay. Well, thank you for sharing.
You're welcome. I feel like
I'm connected to history when I talk to you now.
Oh, hey, does your sister have any of the information about the family?
No, only that she had married a descendant of the brother of Kit Carson.
Huh.
And his first name, her husband's first name, my sister Carmen's husband's first name was Robert. So he's Robert Carson.
Well, there you are. Well, thank you. Again, I feel historic talking to you. Appreciate
it. Okay, thank you.
Take care, Harry.
It's always fun to be historic. We got about a minute here left. One thing I just want to bring up is the need for parks in El Paso, and there's a vote coming up in May about the Lost Dog Trail and whether or not it should turn into houses. God bless the houses, but you know what? We got lots of houses. We have a limited amount of historic land out
there. Open space.
So you will get a chance to vote on that. And I don't know why Bernie, why are we getting a chance to vote on this?
Why?
Yeah. I mean, normally they just.
Yeah.
There was a petition.
Because normally they just do things without asking us.
Yeah. Sometimes petitions actually move forward with the city council. Sometimes they're just kind of ignored.
The point is we can vote on this whether to keep it as a pristine part of the Franklin Mountains.
Yes.
And or turn it into another busy suburban street.
Development.
That's how that goes.
Stay tuned. Right. And I was incorrect about the stage route. It's 25 days from St. Louis to San Francisco.
Yeah.
Okay. And the reason why it took so long to go from Austin to El Paso is because of all the orange cones.
It was a spaghetti bowl. That's what it was.
Somehow I'm not going to buy into that, but it's worth a joke. Anyway, Lost Dog Trail, save that if you can. I think it's a worthy thing. Hey, we're going to get out of here for this hour and come back next hour and talk more about things. And you've got a history moment coming up right after that.
Yes, we do. And so, we also have the trivia contest.
So remember, we
talked about the answers. So.
All right, see you after the news, y'all. Come back and join us.
Y'all.
Thanks for listening to the El Paso History Show. There's another hour to go, so please stay tuned. This hour is brought to you by Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, home of the one and only margarita. EPHistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history, Sargent Home and Business Inventories, and by Las Mansiones, the West Side's new luxury apartments, 915-704-1776. We'll be right back after the news, right here on News Radio 690 KTSM El Paso.
The Sun City Craft Beer Fest, powered by iHeartMedia, is back.
March 30th and March 31st, Downtown Convention Center Plaza.
170-plus craft beers, ciders, food trucks, live music, sports bar and liquor lounge. Did we mention beer?
Get your tickets at suncitycraftbeerfest.com.
Looking to save on Medicare Part D? Switching to Walgreens may help you save on your Medicare Part D prescription. Walgreens, trusted since 1901. Talk to the pharmacist to learn more.
NBC News Radio, I'm John Jeffries. Members of Congress are pushing for quick release of the Mueller report. Special Counsel Robert Mueller finished his probe into Russian interference on Friday and submitted his report to U.S. Attorney General William Barr, who told lawmakers he...